Did you think your plans were secret when you left your office last night and you closed the door behind you? Were you walking in your sleep or were you just too tired to notice all the watchful eyes on you? There's the man who does the maintenance and the man who cleans the carpets in the hall. In the gun down in the lobby through a hidden TV camera saw it all.
And this is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger here in the heartland, in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world.
Government almost exclusively through leaks, claiming that he is an operational member of Al-Qaeda, claiming that Anwar al-Awlaki, you know, was involved operationally with the so-called underwear bomber, Abdul Farouk Abdul Muttalib, who tried to bring down the plane over Detroit. And you have al-Awlaki, you know, the smoke that sort of exists around the story of Nidal Hassan and the Fort Hood shooting and his role with Inspire, the AQAP, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula magazine. And you look at sort of the way that this has played out. Basically, what's happened is that the Obama administration is saying to the American people, we have this intelligence on this guy, but we're not going to publicly state what it is. And we're not going to seek an indictment against him in court, but we want to sentence him to death. and we believe that this is perfectly lawful. And when Awlaki's family, before he was killed, tried to challenge the government's right to assassinate a U.S. citizen without giving him any access to due process, CIA Director Leon Panetta, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, the head of the Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, all submitted briefs in the court saying that the evidence is too dangerous to be made public, and they hid behind the state secrets claim. And so Anwar Awlaki never got his day in court. The important thing, I think, for people to realize is that I don't know whether Anwar Awlaki was involved in any of the things that they have alleged through anonymous officials leaking that he was involved with. But I do know that we have a system of laws that provides for Americans to have due process, to face their accusers, to have the evidence against them be presented. And I feel like we crossed a very dangerous line in authorizing the killing of a U.S. citizen without access to that due process, without having been charged with a crime, to the point where you have the president essentially serving as, you know, judge, jury, prosecutor, and ultimately executioner by authorizing or greenlighting this kind of a strike. If Anwar Awlaki said things that I found deeply offensive and that I think potentially could have resulted in him being indicted, and if he was involved with any of those things, they should have indicted him and treated him as a suspected criminal and tried to apprehend him. And I think that, you know, while I'm opposed to, you know, the drone strikes, for a number of reasons, one of which is I think it's going to make more enemies and it's going to leave us less secure as a nation, they would have been on a lot firmer ground if they had gone through the process of saying, here, American people, is the evidence against one of our own people, and this is why we believe that he needs to be brought to justice in one form or another. So for me, this isn't a story about Anwar Awlaki is some guy who was so misunderstood and that, you know, his death was this epic tragedy. To me, the tragedy here is that we crossed the line under a popular Democratic president that I think a lot of liberals would have pushed back against if a Republican was in office. And, you know, I believe that we should be responding to acts of terrorism and potential terrorists through the lens of law enforcement and viewing it as a crime and trying to hold them accountable under our laws. And the last thing I'll say about this is that no society is defined by how they treat the wealthiest of its people, or how it treats the people that society views as upstanding. Society should be judged, and the principles of a society should be judged on how you treat the least of your people and also the most reprehensible of your citizens. And you could say that Anwar Awlaki did reprehensible things that I think would be deeply offensive to Americans of all political stripes. But if we...
Well, got a email in here from Straydoll. Says, ATT attached as a sound file from last November talking about race on C-SPAN. Incidentally, boys and girls, you can call in on C-SPAN and usually get on there, no problem. It seems the mud people were offended as well as the white nigger-loving female. The white female loves the nigger because she perceives the nigger to be stronger. We can change that, however. It won't happen overnight. The enemy is weak. They can dish it out, but they can't take any criticism or discussion. Don't be afraid to be racist when you can. However, don't let a display of racial feelings ruin your employment. Keep quiet, then, and make comments anonymously. Get out there, white men, and agitate, 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 for there is no greater truth than you deserve whatever you permit. That's right. Absolutely. Thank you, Stray Dog.
You can see it at cspan.org. Dion, Pompano Beach, Florida.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. Good morning. Hi. My comment is to all the so-called black people. Can you black people stop it? Stop calling yourself black. The head of your ink pen that you have in your hand is black. Look at your skin. It's brown. Stop calling yourself black. Please stop it. I am so sick of hearing.
What do you think about the events at the University of Missouri specifically?
Oh, yeah. I want to tell the brown kids, I am so proud of you guys. I am so proud of you guys. It's just pathetic. And stand up for your rights, because that mighty power that sit in the east, you the brown, the beautiful Israelite tribe of Israel, or the 12 tribes, you are some beautiful people, And let me tell you something. Do not be afraid, because that mighty power that sits in the east is your protection.
Patrick from Trenton, New Jersey. Good morning. Go ahead. Talking about events at the University of Missouri. What do you think about them?
Well, Peter, I've been following it very closely and following up on Beulah's comments there. You have to look at the source of the issue here. We're hearing he and a horn on both sides. This is an experiment on desegregation. We're seeing what happens when blacks and whites are forced to mix. What I propose is to have separate universities. So that way these blacks, so-called African-Americans, which are black, they're black and brown, have the separate university. That way they won't have to put up with the white people. Here, it's an attempt to raise the black nation up, an infant race that stomps their feet to get what they want anytime they get what they want. Now they've got a white guy fired for no reason. I hope he finds another job. And another comment, I feel sorry for the white students at the college. I wouldn't want to have to attend school with these type of people. I would say come to Princeton. Come to Ivy League. It's a lot better. Thanks.
If you go to the page of the Washington Post, the story taking a look at the
university. We are never going to have any type of, the majority of black people in this country are always going to be impoverished. And anybody who says that they don't know that racism exists or is still happening, that is a racist. Only a racist would be that indifferent to the fact that that's going on. So let's not play around with that. If you don't know that racism still exists in this year, in this 2015, that's because you're a racist. We need to call you out for being that. And that's my comment. Thank you.
One more call. Mary from Fort Washington, Maryland.
Thank you. Good morning for taking my call. And bless your heart, young lady from Florida. I know there are plenty of people on this earth ready to fight racism, white and black. But to the point of Missouri, if the man, whatever his position was, I just forgot, if he wanted to do something, he would have stayed. Apparently, racism is so harsh and strong, it just knocks you out, and he couldn't handle it. It's kind of like, it's like the callers that are calling, especially that New Jersey caller, you're a racist, and calling the lady Beulah because of what her comments were. That's a prime example of what's wrong. When the president became president, that scab came off, and it's full-fledged open right now. We're going to close it. We're going to close it slowly. It's like white people calling up, or white people asking the slave in the cotton field, what you so mad about, and patting him on the head? That's what these calls remind me of. Well, we're going to get rid of racism because it's the most fungal, vile sickness that there is, and we're going to get rid of it one college at a time. And by the way, let me remind people, Ted Cruz and Huckabee and Bobby Jindal went to an evangelist so-called Christian meeting, and it was actually kill the gay. That's what they talked about, kill the gay. Now, that's disgusting, and that's racism. So you know what? We're going to fight it, and we're going to win. Thank you.
Mary from Fort Washington, Maryland. She will finish off these calls.
Well, that was our good buddy Stray Dog on there on C-SPAN. I'll tell you what. You need to identify yourself as a white racist. They'll be so shocked they'll take your call. This idea of denying you're racist and all that kind of stuff just makes us look bad. Makes us look worse than we really are. So whenever you call in, just flat, they may cut you right off, but just say, I'm calling, I'm a white racist, and I have an opinion, and give your opinion, no holds barred. That's what you need to do. Because if you're anonymously calling and afraid to say I'm a white racist, then I don't know what to say, what value you would be. Nobody could be more out in the open than I am. Signs in front of my house, everything, stickers on my car whenever I want to. Doesn't bother me, and I haven't had any problems at all. A little more on that drone situation. If they're doing it over there, it's going to happen here. You're going to see armed drones seeking out perceived enemies in this country. You better get ready for that one, because it's coming. Interesting stuff here on Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte. Compared his anti-drug campaign to Hitler's persecution of the Jews during World War I or II, saying Hitler massacred 3 million Jews. Well, he didn't. He massacred several, but not that many. Now there are 3 million drug addicts, in the Philippines, and I'd be happy to slaughter them. Yeah, so that's what he's got to say. Well, it couldn't make the Philippines any worse than it is. Let's see. You know my victims, he says. I would like to be all criminals to finish the problem of my country and save the next generation from perdition, he said. Well, I think that's not a bad idea. The comment was a response to critics who have likened him to Hitler. Oh, my. An estimated 6 million Jewish people, blah, 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 since Duterte swept into power in July, more than 3,300 Filipinos have been killed, either gunned down by the police in late-night drug operations or felled by assassins, often after being named by the police. Whoa. Victims of the extrajudicial killing spree are drug suspects, or those misidentified as drug suspect, named on police lists and targeted before they are charged or given a chance to stand trial. Oh, poor drug addicts. Often their bodies are dumped up by the roadside with signs that read, Pusher. The United States and the United Nations and the European Union have all expressed concern about the conduct of the war on drugs. Oh, it's terrible. They're killing drug addicts. When President Obama raised the issue, Duterte lashed out using a slang term that translates, son of a whore. Well, I'm sure he was. When the European Parliament issued a statement, Duterte literally gave them the finger. Sounds good to me. Yeah. Duterte cast Friday's comment as a response to European hypocrisy. Quote, you close your doors, it's winter time. There are migrants escaping from the Middle East. You allow them to rot, and you're worried about the deaths of about 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, he said, according to the GMA. Duterte's Hitler comment barely made headlines in the Philippines, where the president's bloody hyperbole has become almost commonplace. Although Duterte did not seem to be praising Hitler, per se, it's worth noting at least one similarity in how he and the Nazi leaders speak about violence. For Hitler, extermination was the final solution. Duterte on Friday used the same violently apocalyptic tone, casting his campaign as the only way to finish the problem and save the nation. Yeah, how about that? I think you're going to see this kind of action begin to happen all over the world. There's going to be some changes made. The most dangerous countries to travel in, first, is Qatar. Yeah. First is Qatar. The second is Jordan. The third is Kuwait. The fourth is Bahrain. The fifth is Maldives. I don't even know where that's at. Next is United Arab Emirates. Next is Iran. Next is Israel, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip. I was very close to that Gaza Strip, but not in it. I made the mistake of asking for I got the religious tour instead of the secular tour. I regret that. Another dangerous country to travel in is Tunisia. The next is China. The next is Armenia. The next is Costa Rica. The next is Saudi Arabia. The next is Nicaragua. The next is Azerbaijan. The next is Algeria. The next is Morocco. The next is Oman. The next is Sri Lanka. The next is good old Mexico. The next is Jamaica. The next is Uzbekistan. The next is Kyrgyz Republic. K-Y-R-G-Y-Z Republic. I don't know where in the hell that's at. The next is Vietnam. The next is Bangladesh. Next is Dominica. The next is the Dominican Republic. The next is Paraguay. The next is Kazakhstan. Next is St. Lucia. The next is Mongolia. Next is Belize. The next is Ukraine. The next is Colombia. The next is Venezuela. Next is France. The next is Bosnia and Herzegovina. The next is Tajikistan. Next is Honduras. Next is East Timor. The next is Turkmenistan. The next is the Bahamas. The next is Suriname. Next, Peru. Next, Trinidad and Tobago. The next is Belgium. Next, Brazil. Next, Nepal. Next, Ecuador. Next, Philippines. Next, Indonesia. Next, Thailand. Next, Bolivia. Next, Russia. Next, El Salvador. Next, Solomon Islands. And then Laos. Burma. Madagascar. Haiti. Senegal. Ghana. Well, the list just keeps going. I'm not going to go through every damn little nigger country in the world. Almost none of these countries are white or majority white. So that gives you an idea. You best stay home, whitey. And if you get into these countries and get your ass in trouble, you're on your own as far as I'm concerned. You can't go crying to the U.S. Embassy because they're probably not going to do anything anyhow. In all of these countries, there's some kind of internal struggle going on, and you could get it simply in the back of the head. Here is a weird one, boys and girls. In Ottawa, Canada, the Reverend Greta Bosper is a dynamic activist minister with a loyal following at her Protestant congregation in suburban Toronto. She is also an outspoken atheist. Quote, "We don't talk about God," unquote, Vosper said in an interview, describing services at her West Hill United Church, adding that it's time the church gave up on the idolatry of a theistic God. That's pretty funny. Vosper's decision to reject God, Jesus Christ, and the Holy Spirit, and to turn her church into a haven for non-believers looking for a community that will help them create meaningful lives without God, has become too much even for the liberal-minded United Church of Canada. The United Church, the country's largest Protestant denomination, has begun an extraordinary process that could end up stripping Vosper of her rights to continue as a minister. Well, why would she want to be a minister in a Christian church anyhow? That don't even make sense. Well, I see they're trying to lump people like me and hopefully you into this crazy-ass white supremacy Duke coalition. And where he states boldly, he says this for years, everybody's equal. I want to treat everybody equally. Well, I don't. I want to treat white people a lot more unequal. Absolutely. Not since the Southern segregationists and racist George Wallace failed in presidential bids in 68 and 72 have white nationalists been so motivated to participate in a presidential election. Well, I'm not, and I'm not a white nationalist. I'm a white racist separatist worldwide. They don't want to talk about us, or they don't want to talk about me, because I don't fit the puzzle. I don't fit in the right place in this thing. Probably you don't either. Late last night, I was listening on the radio, and I heard a big, long dissertation by Barack Obama about Shimon Peres, the Israeli president that died. He went on and on and on. I didn't think it ever stopped. He probably gave the longest eulogies of anybody that was over there to this funeral for this guy. Unbelievable. He thinks he is super nigger, that's for sure. And he went on and on and on. I thought he was never going to stop. Yeah, that's right. Most people don't know that now there are white Jewish racial groups in Israel, and they're pretty tough talking, too. Tough talking more even than some of the so-called racists over here. They've even got a black concentration camp over there in Israel. It's a giant, the biggest prison in Israel, one of the bigger ones in the world on their southern border. And when these sub-Saharan Negroes come north into Israel, they're stuffing them in there wholesale, big time. You don't hear much talk about it, though, do you? The U.S. press leave that one alone. And they have a lot of anti-black get-togethers in the streets and stuff, demonstrations. I think they've got at least one political party, a minor party, but it's racial. Racist news from Russia. Moscow, Russian club FC Rostov, is likely to face a UEFA disciplinary case for fan racism after a banana was thrown onto the field during a Championship League game against PSV Eindhoven. The FAIR network, which monitors racist incidents for UEFA, said Thursday the banana was thrown about 8 minutes into Wednesday's 2-2 draw game. The banana remained on the field for at least 15 minutes. I love it. Quote, we have reviewed the media from the match and have seen that it took place in the 8th minute after Rostov scored and took place in the opposite end of the action. FARE director Pilar Powar said in an email statement, quote, a supplementary report to UEFA will follow from us this morning. Wow, Koloskov, the Russian Football Union's honorary president, said the incident could tarnish Russia's image as it prepares to host the World Cup in 2018. Well, there you go. Run for the hills, the racists are at it, throwing bananas onto the sports field. How about that? Got to track them down and get those guys, man. Columbia, Missouri, a fraternity at the University of Missouri have been suspended while officials investigate reports of racial and sexist slurs. Wow. University officials and the Delta Upsilon National Organization suspended the chapter of the fraternity Wednesday after members were accused of shouting racial slurs at black students late Tuesday. They called them niggers. Two black female students and other students yelled racial slurs at them. Wait a minute. Two black female students said other students, yelled racial slurs at them as they walked past the fraternity house. The alleged slurs include the nigger word and misogynistic expletives. That's a big long word. Misogynistic. I guess that was queer or something. The traditional suspension means that the fraternity cannot use campus facilities or participate in campus events such as homecoming. The fraternity has been cited for multiple university violations this semester, including alcohol violations, according to the university statement. Bad boys yelling niggers at black girls. Oh, here's another terrible story. McKeesport, Pennsylvania, an officer, a police officer on the job for only a few weeks, has been fired by the McKeesport, Pennsylvania Police Department after an old social media post surface showing her in a uniformed selfie captioned with a racial slur. Quote, "I'm the law today, nigger," unquote. Now former officer Melissa Adamson, who is white, wrote atop her vanity selfie in a post to social media. Predictably and understandably, the internet exploded in fury over the image, alerting the mayor of McKeesport to the inexcusable behavior. Quote, "As mayor of McKeesport, I feel compelled to publicly address an issue that has come to my attention via social media. A past social media post surfaced a few hours ago involving a recently hired part-time police officer who has been training as a probation employee for just a few weeks. This displays a degree of conduct and character that is far different than what I would expect from an officer in this city," unquote. Wow. They're mad at her. They're going to fire her. Well, she's a pretty girl. She shouldn't be a cop anyhow. No, she shouldn't. She's too pretty to be a cop. Well, hot diggity dog, they're on the ball. The University of Wisconsin La Crosse appears to be on a roll these days. The hypersensitive campus is set to host a review of all the students' Halloween costumes to ensure they do not come out across as racist. UWL made headlines recently for a student's outrage at a Harry Potter character-themed mural that the students claimed depicted manpower, CIS power, able power, class power, unquote. In a comical attempt to avoid offending anyone else on campus, the Ethnic and Racial Studies Department of UW La Crosse is holding a Halloween costume review. "Is your costume racist?" a poster for the event queries passerbys. "Well, it probably is." Well, let's go back in time a little bit. I just dug out a little bulletin from November 72 for the National Socialist operations on the West Coast. It's interesting, some of the things they were doing. Communist leader Gus Hall was treated to the sight of colorful swastika armbands on the arms of five stormtroopers, led by Bill Gold, who distributed anti-red literature in front of the Unitarian Church in downtown Los Angeles, where Hall was making an election speech to religious fools in the absurd hope that someone in the crowd would vote for him. The stormtroopers gave interviews to some old Jew Reds serving as members of a Soviet film crew who were taking pictures for the boys back home. Needless to say, our men made quite an impression. Next is a story, Republicans exposed by the National Socialists on October 25, 72. Red-faced Republicans are hard-pressed to explain their attempt to destroy the presence of the American Independent Party on the ballot by paying through intermediaries, one Robert J. Walters in particular, the NSWPP, to re-register known AIP voters to the Republican cause. Through tactics of deception and bribery, Walters attempted to enlist NSWPP aid in his scheme, which not only failed, but through articles in various newspapers, the LA Free Press, for example, and interviews on the radio station KPFK, the truth of the matter becomes general knowledge. The party did accept Walters' money and did register voters in turn. However, Walters failed to pay the amount agreed upon, and the party therefore felt justified in exposing the devious behavior of a representative of our democratic process. It might be remembered that the Republicans are embroiled in other matters of centrifuge, subterfuge, such as the Watergate affair, and is blatant evidence of the corruption rampant in Tricky Dick's own party. We may wonder what kind of games the Democrats have been playing. Next article, Chicanos fire shots at the St. Paul Muni, November 3, 72. One night around 1:30 a.m., three drunken Mexicans caused a disturbance outside the headquarters of the NSWPP in El Monte. That's in California. Stormtrooper Paul Muni opened the door of the headquarters to see what the problem was. Thereupon, he was fired at with a .22 caliber rifle. St. Muni returned the fire, and the would-be murderers fled. It just so happened that the El Monte Police Department were just behind the Mexicans when the shooting started. The Mexicans were chased by the police and later arrested for attempted murder. The bullet fired by the Mexicans lodged in the front door 3 inches from Trooper Mooney's head. No action was taken against Muni by the police. Next article, The Future Calls on LA Radio on November 6th. The left-wing radio station KPFK was forced by the El Monte headquarters to air Commander Kale's The Future Calls commentary on November 6 and 8 of 72. This particular program dealt with the imprisonment of Rudolf Hess. After the airing of this program, the station refused to broadcast any future commentaries, even though they claimed to be free speech. A free speech station, an example of which is a 30-minute commentary each week by Dorothy Rosenblum Healy, a Jew communist. Pressure will be exerted to change the minds of those people who can change this situation at the station. Next article. Donald Butler paroled. Comrade Donald Butler will soon be paroled after serving more than a year and a half for shooting at attackers of the El Monte headquarters. He will be required not to have anything to do with the party as a major part of his parole. All the letters sent to him by his comrades were always destroyed in front of him so as to destroy all hope of ever getting out of jail. Well, let's see here. What else do we have? National Socialists hit peace march, November 18th. Forever trying to end the war in Vietnam with treasonous collaboration, 344 Reds were confronted by 28 stormtroopers, determined to provide overdue justice. Heavy police guard prevented any incidents. Police pulled the party truck and the accompanying vehicles to the side of the road, and with professional demeanor and politeness, searched everyone for weapons. Following this formality, the truck pulled in front of the massed Reds with the expected result of shock and surprise. The party received massive publicity from this event, and naturally the demonstration by the Reds accomplished nothing in the way of putting a stop to the Vietnam tragedy. Marshall Wright loses court battle, November 27th. Because Marshall Wright bought a lunch from the money given to him by citizens for copies of the White Power newspaper, it was determined at the end of the 7-day-long jury trial that he, therefore, was guilty of operating a business without a license, which is required by El Monte City Ordinance. The judge issued a fine of $25 and 1 year unsupervised probation. Party attorney James White gave a flamboyant final statement, which apparently shocked the reactionary jury. Stormtroopers march against Jane Fonda on November 4th. Head scum Jane Fonda and her pack of fellow scum littered downtown Los Angeles with their odious presence to demonstrate their simple-mindedness and Red sympathies in free speech for the benefit of Jewish publicists. They weren't expecting the sight of 23 stormtroopers in opposition as the party fighters arrived in the newly acquired party 2.5-ton truck, appropriately decorated with large white swastikas on the doors. Although no incidents took place, the Reds were taken aback by the spectacle of the stormtrooper men presented and as much as said so in the recent article in the Jewish Red Mouthpiece of Los Angeles Free Press. The party photographer made a movie of this occasion, which has been exhibited at the recent party meetings. That was Sam Napier, a good friend of mine, who was the cameraman for the National Socialists. He later moved to San Diego and worked with myself and the Klan. Ray Wilson, the local unit leader in San Diego, would like all interested persons to contact him by writing to the new unit address. Mexican attempts to firebomb headquarters. After hearing a disturbance outside the building at about 11 p.m. Saturday night, Paul Mooney and Bruce Matthews went to see what the commotion was all about. They discovered what appeared to be Chicano version of the Bay of Pigs invasion, and it failed just as miserably. It is supposed party members were expected to be terrified by flying eggs, which they bravely threw from speeding cars. The more stupid ones pulled up in front of the building and threw a firebomb, which was ineffectual as usual, at which time Stormtrooper Mooney chambered a round in his pistol and fired at the vehicle. The first round misfired, which allowed the Chicano idiot time to maneuver around the car parked in front of him. Mooney chambered a second round and fired it, and this time hot lead put a little motivation into the rear end of the fleeing blue Camaro and its frightened Mexican driver. Commander Cale to visit L.A. March 31, 73. A special notice will be sent to all official supporters and party members concerning Commander Cale's March visit. A massive NS meeting will take place along with speeches from the top party leadership. There will, in addition, be a showing of Triumph of the Will. Party mailing list computerized. As you can see by the address labels, our 2000 name LA mailing list has been computerized. The machine we have at our disposal are worth $1.5 million. The cost to us is minimal. This advance will save countless hours of manpower. LA National Socialists clashed with the JDL January 20, 73. On Saturday, January 20, an army truck packed with 25 uniformed stormtroopers headed towards Los Angeles to confront 1,300 communist queers and other degenerate elements of the democratic society with the force and violence of revolutionary national socialist idealism. As the truckload of troopers entered L.A. city limits, a carload of police began their usual tail on the truck. Closer and closer, the truck entered what is now enemy territory for national socialists. More and more long-haired creeps and nigger contraband could be seen. Suddenly, we were approaching Pershing Square when one red flag could be seen, then another, and then another. The whole place was crawling with swine in all shades and sizes. As the stormtrooper men neared the Reds, one could feel the fear they felt towards National Socialists. As their march began, the troopers yelled and chanted NS slogans. The air horn on the truck blared out, and tension mounted. But with all the egging on by the stormtroopers, the thousands of creeps refused to fight. So the party battle wagon moved on to the L.A. City Hall, where the Reds were to hold a rally. As the National Socialists took to the streets, 15 members of the Raggedy Jewish Defense League followed, chanting and yelling vulgarities commonly attributed to Jewish culture. When the National Socialists neared the rear of the city hall, the Jews threw a bottle at the marching stormtroopers, who instantly charged the Jews. A tremendous fistfight broke out. Every Jew landed on the ground and was severely beaten. Jew blood flowed freely into the grass and the pavement, depending on where the particular kike fell. NS pickets sticks crash down with some thunderous blows onto the Jews' skulls, opening new blood-soaked wounds. Once on the ground, the JDLers were unmercifully kicked and poked with boots and sticks until many Jews were left unconscious. At any chance, Jews ran for police protection. Even the leader, Irv Rubin, ran after a trooper, smashed him alongside the Schnozzola with a picket stick. He wasn't seen till after a large police force arrived. Even as police arrived en masse, troopers could still be seen dragging Jews by the feet, all the while being kicked and clubbed. Eventually, the last creepy kike got away. A few Jews were sent to the hospital with multiple head wounds and bruises. No stormtrooper personnel received any injury, but one trooper, St. Philip Fogarty, was arrested for overreacting when defending himself against the JDLers. Apparently, the boys complained that he was wiping Jews out left and right. Fogarty faces charges of assault with a deadly weapon. The Jews will never learn that they don't mess with National Socialists unless they want to get wiped out. Phil Fogarty, I knew personally. He headed up not only, he was involved in the National Socialists, but he created a Catholic, a right-wing Catholic group of National Socialists. I went to his church one time, accompanied him, and he was in full uniform of this Catholic Nazi outfit. JDL plans massive demonstration against LA headquarters. In reaction to the severe beating the JDL received from the stormtroop section of the NSWPP on January 20th, they have announced a massive Jew demonstration similar to that of January 30th, 72. This next schmuckless demonstration is to take place on March 4th, 73, a Sunday at 12 noon. At this particular demonstration, the JDL has announced plans to come with guns, so if the kikes want to have any gunplay, they've come to the right place. If they make one wrong move, we'll mow them down. Every National Socialist is asked to mobilize and be at the headquarters of the National Socialist White People's Party at 4375 North Peck Road, El Monte, California, no later than 8:30 a.m., Sunday morning, March the 4th. Be prepared for one hell of a fight. For further details, extra special security precautions are being developed for the event. The fight has come. Wage war with us against the common enemy, the Jew. Okay, let's see. Well, that's it from that particular bulletin. That was when they had their main office was Arlington, Virginia. And they had a unit in El Monte, Los Angeles, California. They had a unit in Tracy, California, and they had a San Diego unit of the National Socialist White People's Party. So that's a little bit of what was going on back in the early 70s. They were kicking ass. All that activity was taking place just two or three years before I really came out of the closet as a racist, which would have been at about the same time, I guess, yeah. But I never belonged to the National Socialist Party, even though I knew a whole bunch of the guys that were in it. Let's read a bit from Siege before we leave you. On the opiate of the masses, there can hardly be any question that the church has been edged out, or at least relegated to the backseat position for the title of opiate of the masses, which organized religion held so for so many centuries. The new one, of course, is television. After all, you don't have to go to it on Sunday. The foul thing lives in your home with you for entertainment purposes, it has practically any preacher going beat by a mile. So look at how many of them use television. Everything the church used to offer the community, the television now offers, from sermons, editorials, and more subtle propaganda. The fellowship's imaginary, of course, in the form of soap operas, to even passing the plate commercials, plus everything in between. The normally, nominally white actors on television are co-equal with the nominal white ministers in the church. Both read straight from Jewish scripts, not attacking inanimate objects, neither buildings nor boxes, churches or TV sets, but only the way that they are handled and the effects they have on the white race. There is little doubt that the television is the worst of the two. But the television is not an institution that can be very helpful, beneficial, in fact, once all the networks are in National Socialist hands. What of the church after a National Socialist revolution? Shall we put armbands on all the priests, or shall we put stormtroopers in the black robes? Shall we attempt to enlighten those who in power and pray that they will behave themselves and not act the role of subversives in our midst? Can we afford to allow an incredibly large, powerful organization, a state within a state, that currently is a major part of the enemy's scheme to go on functioning as before once our revolution has succeeded? More importantly, as we must decide now, is it at all necessary that we do so? The answer in each case is no. At present, the church presents its worst danger to the white race because of the common denominator of all the messages parroted by the born-agains: lay down, submit, and let God handle it. It has all been written. It is all inevitable. Further, it is only the next world that matters. This world and this life means nothing, so just concentrate on avoiding sin, or go ahead and sin, but beg like crazy for forgiveness, and really score points with the hereafter. Hang it all up in the present reality of today, here and now, the bank, and bank everything on some afterlife in some never-never land. If that doesn't sound like some kind of opiate, then I don't know what is. Yeah. Can you voodoo? The monumental cathedrals built by the genius Western man in the name of his religion compare identically to the mud and clay huts carved and wooden idols that the primitive races erect in their particular religions. Same comparison as our ICBM missiles to their spears and blowguns. Same concepts of war and religious worship, just that the white man does it better. One big stumbling block on our way towards Nietzsche's concept of the Superman is what we still share with the lowest specimens of humanity: guilt, fear, conscience, hang-ups of every sort. The psychological self-limitations, idiotic notions of good and evil, unreason and plain superstition. If we can't break with subhumanity on the psychological level, then we can hardly hope to part company with them on the physiological level. If you're going to think like primitive savages, then you might as well be a primitive savage. What makes Christianity seem to be the religion of mankind has nothing whatsoever to do with any of its promises or tenets. For the Muslim faith promises sex in the hereafter. Not even with how many people in the world today embrace its philosophy, which incidentally is a minority. It is because that was the religion that so happened to get foisted off on a white man, and it was his genius and creativity that gave it its strength, beauty, clarity, forcefulness, and whatever real value it may once have possessed. Anything of a positive nature to be found in the doctrine and the workings of Christianity did not come from the sky or from the pages of a book, but rather from the blood of the white race, which foolishly adopted it. Blacks, browns, and yellows aren't backward or savage because of any backward or savage religion. It is because it is their nature to be so. The lowest level primitive in the jungles of Haiti is no more voodooistic than the highest bishop or cardinal in Europe or America, but the style and the presentation are a hell of a lot different. That ends that reading. And that's it for today, boys and girls. Freya's Day. To all you lone wolf ladies out there, I'll be back on Moon's Day with another jam-packed racist program. 14-5.
All together, shout it out, let's go.